All right, how's it going, everybody? Chris Block here, thethirdmanin.com, Puck Chatter Radio, all that fun stuff. We're here today, Al Simaglia. How you doing? Al, I believe the purpose for this recording is we're here today to celebrate the 2026 Stanley Cup champion Chicago Blackhawks. I believe that's what we're here to do.
That's right. This is the start of the grand reset.
That was the plan, right? Like that it's to replicate what happened, 15 years or so ago, and they've done it. Al, they have Korch, they have Bedard, and now they're going to win the Stanley Cup in 3 years. So we have that forward to. Yeah, but until then, we can. I don't know. We'll find something to talk about. How's it going, everybody? For historical purposes, yes, this is 2 days we're recording this following the Blackhawks winning the 2023 NHL Draft Lottery. It is May the 10th, 2023. It's about the middle of the afternoon. Maybe it's the early afternoon. Depends on when you get up. So, Al, yes, the Blackhawks and their grand plan, their grand reset plan, they struck the lottery in more ways than one, if you are looking at it. The plan worked. It was a gamble. It was absolutely a gamble, and a gamble paid off, and that's fine. There's no apologizing for it at this point. Like they had a plan. It was a gamble, and gamblers win, right? Like I know this, you know, you gamble, you win, you lose. They won. And it's funny because I was talking to somebody about this on Monday night, actually, after the whole presentation, right? And if you were watching and you saw like they cut to Kyle Davidson and the Blackhawks have just won the lottery, and he looked confused, like he didn't know. Like, did you see? Like he just like he didn't know how to react, you know?
But he looked like I looked. Yeah,
he looked well.
Yeah, it was kind of stunning.
I've had that look on, like, when you're sitting at the roulette table or somewhere and you're like, holy shit, I just won $1,000. You know, like, you know, you're yeah. like, oh my God, like it, I, you know, I put, you know, $25 down on 27 and I just hit, you know, like it's like you have that moment. That was the look that he had. He won a gambler's, you know, it was a gambler's bet, and kudos to him. I mean, it's, and as a Blackhawk fan too, I think my advice to you, like I'm a Blackhawk season ticket holder. We've talked about this before. I don't really care if they win or lose. I just want to enjoy myself when I go. I want to see competitive hockey, and I'd like to be able to sell my tickets occasionally when I don't go. From my perspective,
that's an honest assessment.
Yeah. From my perspective, this is great. I'm happy because now people are going to be interested in going to the games again. I can sell them when I want. And when I go, the Blackhawks now, they have a path, right? So they have a path. So this is great. I'm not here to dump on anybody's parade because I'm satisfied, right?
Well,
I've been demanding
satisfaction
for a while, and now I'm satisfied. Go ahead.
Well, I think for me, I have something to look forward to because as much fun as it was, you know, to celebrate the three cups and to see all of that, the anticipation was a big part of it. Now, first off, I want to make so that there's no misunderstanding. I hope Kyle Davidson does a great job, everything. He matures, everything falls into place as much as possible. The first step was predominantly luck, okay? There's really no other way to look at it because it's an astronomical amount of variables to end up number one. And you could almost see, you could see that. I mean, it's just everything had to fall into place. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with getting lucky because everyone that lands the number one pick had to get lucky. Now, I would hope that there's some urgency as far as like making moves to move forward. I think I never thought that they would finish on the bottom. They almost did, but it didn't matter. They were close enough that they could get the number one pick. But I stick with what I've said for the last couple of years. You can't predict timing. So they have a lot of cap space. They need to develop players. They need to coach them up. And he has an opportunity now to reshape, reset, however you want to say it, basically almost the entire team. And he has to be on his toes. You can't rush this. It's kind of like, I guess the best way to put it would be, if you were writing a and you were your thing was you were the person who wrote the lyrics, and the music is constantly changing, it's a tremendously tough job in a lot of ways because there's so many different variables. You're dealing with very young kids. You know, they just had a guy that they really thought a lot of in Frankie Nazar. He's a serious injury. He played only a handful of games in college. You know, things like that happen. So what I'm saying is basically is play the hand that's in front of you, be on your toes, look to take other chances when you feel comfortable, and let the timeline play out for what it is. The players that were drafted in 15, and there were two franchise changers, really, you could say, in McDavid and Eichel, they're just getting a chance now to maybe follow through to a Stanley Cup. So, and they were elite players. In Jack Eichel's case, a lot of disappointment, and that's something to be wary about. Losing constantly is no good. It's no good for the guy that's supposed to be the centerpiece of the team, that everyone's expecting to be whatever they're expecting him to be. And in Eichel's case, at some point he got disappointed. Even though he got paid, he got disappointed. And then you hear stories about their personalities and different things. So enjoy this. It's a great, great start. It's a franchise-changing start, possibly, barring no injuries or health issues. This kid looks to be, well, he looks to be a generational player. So now concentrate on building the infrastructure of this team, scouting, coaches, because that's the one thing that they had the last time they went on a run. And I don't feel as confident about either one of those things right now.
Right. I mean, the development is the key. And that's we'll talk about that in a little bit here in my concerns. You know, obviously I'm being a little, you know, cheeky at the beginning there. There's still obviously there's so much work to be done. And I don't trust their development. And they just haven't done it. And until they do it, you shouldn't. I mean, you can have hope and you can be all in, and there's those people out there that they're for one reason or another, they've latched on and they've believed, and boy, did they have a day on Monday, right? Like they had a great day on Monday, but there's still so much work to be done. But that's, from my perspective, that's the exciting part, because now the clock is ticking. Now the real serious business has to be done. Like it's real easy to tear down and tank and then hope that you get the first overall pick. Okay, that's done. You did it. Congratulations. Now the real work starts, because you're not going to win just with Bedard and if Korchinski's an all-star. Like that's not enough. Like you need all these other pieces, and you're going to have to develop them on your own, a lot of them. Some of you can go outside and get – you're going to – and that's the thing too. Kyle Davidson's going to have to make real hockey trades, not just dumping players for prospects or picks. He's only done picks, really. He's going to have to do some more. I do want to, before we get into all that, I do want to address something, though, that is kind of like the cloud that hangs over all of this. And it is part of the reality of this is that the Blackhawks do get to reset. It's a pass-go kind of a card for them that they get to turn the page. It's Connor Bedard gets to turn the page on an awful lot of stuff. We haven't done a podcast since it's happened, but I don't really participate in Twitter anymore. But the whole idea that the Blackhawks, there are voices out there that wanted to tell you that the Blackhawks didn't push out Patrick Kane, and then you come to find out that yeah, actually they did. And if you didn't believe him then, you know, they pushed Jonathan Toews out at the end and said, we're not going to resign you. You're done. They've wanted to move on. And there could have been hard feelings for that. There could have been repercussions for that. And now they've got Bedard, so all that washes away. It's an incredible moment for the organization that this has happened, because it does turn the page on an awful lot of stuff, Kyle Beach included. I mean, for some people, it'll never turn the page, of course. But I do want to say that if you're a Blackhawks fan, don't apologize for being excited. Don't apologize for basking in the glow of getting this pick. And all indications is that Bedard is an incredible generational talent. Enjoy it. But there are people out there that believe that the Blackhawks shouldn't have had this pick, right? And they're not wrong. They're not wrong in thinking that the Blackhawks should have been penalized more than what they were penalized. So just accept that that's a feeling that's out there, and, you know, they're not wrong. And, you know, some people say, well, it wouldn't have been this pick. Yeah, it would have been, because they traded away their pick last year. So the first number one that they could have been penalized would have been the 2023. So
could I touch on that for a minute?
Yeah.
I'll disagree from this standpoint. They don't take away picks from organizations for lacking a moral compass, or having a bent moral compass, or having too little regard for a player. That doesn't happen. People will say I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth. People lost their jobs for something that they probably couldn't have prevented, but they could have done something about. And I'm the last in line to defend how the Blackhawks handled that whole situation. It left a mark on a young man, and it damaged lives. And you could take it out a step. It maybe led to further damage to the Predator, to other people later on, no doubt. But I don't think they could have taken any draft picks away from them. They got fined the $2 million, which people said wasn't enough. It was basically for violating the business plan that they had filed with the NHL. If you want to keep this on your, you know, top of mind, and you want to let it bother you, riddle me this. In 2010, how could the owner of the team not know about a sexual assault or a claimed sexual assault by a coach on a player? How could the NHL commissioner not know about the same thing? How could the NHLPA stand hands down on that for so long? How could any of that really have taken place in 2010? So there's a lot of other factors involved to this. None of them are good. I don't think there was any way they were going to lose draft picks for not violating a hockey rule like John Chyka with the combine and things like that. Could they have been fined more than $2 million? Could they have done something to Bill Wirt or to Rocky Wirtz? Yeah, probably. I mean, you have one person who basically has the rule book in their pocket to a certain extent, but I don't think he had the ability to take draft picks away from them.
Well, I mean,
I don't think that would have helped.
Gary Bettman, he could do whatever he wants. I mean,
But you sign off on by all the other owners. Like, for example, everyone lost their jobs that had a touch involved in this except Chevy in Winnipeg. Now, the backstory that you hear the rumblings on that is because the owner of the Jets has sway with Bettman. He's one of his main people. Now, they made a case that he had little to do with anything. Yeah, but, you know, when the president of the operation doesn't follow through, of the franchise. You know, people underneath them didn't follow through either. The police weren't notified, a lot of different things. My point being, there's always going to be, it's fixed because it was Chicago. And I'll tell you what, if they fix that, after watching the clunky video of that, of what they did with the numbers and everything else, it's astronomical amount of odds that you have to bypass to, or you have to solve to get the number one pick. What I'm saying is, let that go. If you want that to be, you know, it's the same type of people that want to say Kane's a rapist. I mean, you know, who knows? But, I mean, the grand jury didn't indict him. I mean, the DA didn't take it any further in an election year that could have put him on the map for the next 25 years in Buffalo. If you want to believe that, you believe it. But I'm saying, for people that want to think that, I mean, I think they just have to get past that, because I'll let you in on a little secret. The NHL is basically a closed shop compared to other sports leagues. And don't think, I'm not seeing the same thing happen in other places, but you could see a few people lost their jobs afterwards. There's, it's not a lily white situation. None of these leagues are.
Well, Al, I mean, to your point, I mean, we can go back, and as someone who's read the Jenner and Block report a few times,
right.
I mean, that the purpose of that Jenner and Block report was to absolve Rocky Wirtz of any, as it, you know, it's obvious now, that it was to absolve Rocky Wirtz of any wrongdoing, and then turn the page. There were people that took hits, but nobody threw Rocky under the bus. There, you know, Al MacIsaac and Stan Bowman lost their jobs, but they still kept getting paid, and Joe Quenneville lost his job because he lied to the media. Like, if Joel wouldn't have lied to the media, told the media one story, and then gone in and told Jenner and Block a different story,
You think he would have kept his job?
I do.
Yeah, see, I don't disagree with anything you're saying, and you analyzed that and had it up for a long time for people to look at, and you're right. You know, my thing is, how? How could the owner of the team not know? How could the commissioner of the league not know? But there, you know.
But right. But the point to be made is that the purpose of this for people, because again, you have to give Blackhawks fans, hockey fans, you have to give the fans of the league an excuse to move on, and you know, you're not taking the franchise away from Rocky. And Blackhawks fans, at the end of the day, have to continue to be Blackhawks fans, and they have to feel good about it. So that's what the purpose of the whole Jenner and Block report was. And, yeah, it was to, you know, because Danny Wirtz and Rocky Wirtz could have walked down the hall and asked everybody what happened and found out for themselves, right? Like, they could have fired Stan Bowman in August. I don't want to rehash all this stuff. But that was the purpose of it. It was to give Blackhawks fans an excuse to move on and feel good about it. And if there are people today that will tell you all the bad people are gone now, all the people that had anything to do with that were gone. Except for at least one, you know, and it's a pretty important one. But, I mean, that's the way of the world. Like, you know, powerful people.
And Stan Bowman's Stan Bowman's replacement is the person that he hired,
Right.
I mean, so you got to let it. That's what I'm saying. I think at some point you have to let it go, and I think it's naive to not question the macro picture, the whole systemic thing, and the fact that, you know, stuff happens, stuff gets hidden away, and it shouldn't happen, and it is what it is, unfortunately, unless you're going to see someone challenge the commissioner or someone – the league just plods along. Everyone's happy. Everyone slaps themselves on the back. The media really doesn't criticize the league because they're afraid to. So it is what it is. I mean, you know.
Well, Al, the other thing too, and I want to get into like where things go from here. And but I was another conversation I was having actually yesterday with someone, day after the lottery, was. How, like, if you want to think about this term, I mean, it is luck, right? There's no question about it. They, you know, and the Hawks were lucky a few years ago in moving up all those draft picks to draft third, and they wound up with Kirby Dach, and that's maybe people would say that's not so lucky, right? But, like, for all this talk, right, of Bowman and the decisions he made, he was a horrible general manager, and I'm not here to disagree with that. I was the one barking that the loudest when people were arguing with me that I was wrong, right? And there are other people that were arguing the same points I was. I wasn't alone on an island there, but I was on that because I was watching in real time this organization make bad decisions on prospects and not develop prospects, and you could see the writing on the wall. But
for
that
years,
all being said, that all being said, had Bowman in 2018 or 2019 said, you know what, let's do the teardown. Okay, this is what I'm talking about with luck, right? If he does the teardown then and says, we're going to tear this whole thing down and we're going to go for the lottery, and he winds up with the number one pick or the number two pick in the 2020 NHL entry draft, who does he wind up with, Al? He winds up with Alex Lafreniere or Quinton Byfield or somebody like that, right?
Yeah, and where the third pick would be the number one pick today.
Right. So there's also just a happenstance of this whole thing where mistakes, and you've talked about before, like one mistake leads to another. This is a case of there were mistakes, and then it's like a point of no return, which is kind of where the Blackhawks were at. Kyle Davidson didn't have a choice but to rebuild, and we've never argued that they didn't need to rebuild. It was just the blatant tanking that bothered me. And you can be bad on purpose, but still accomplish things. And that was my main frustration with what the Blackhawks have been doing the last 2 years. You know, there were still other things that can be accomplished while being bad and finishing with the third worst record that they chose not to do, that I do believe will be problems moving forward. But they made these mistakes. Stan Bowman, for his reasons, didn't feel, and we covered that before, like where Stan was reported that Stan, he had this option. He's like, well, we need to rebuild and we can do this thing now. And Al McIsaac pounded his fist on the table and said no, because we'll all be fired before all that even comes, you know, turns around and we're successful again. So there's reasons why he didn't do it, but it was an easy move for Kyle Davidson. Because Stan didn't do it put Davidson in this position where he was in line to draft Bedard or Fantilli or Leo Carlson or Michkov, and, you know, as opposed to Lafreniere, Byfield, Drysdale, you know, Cole Perfetti and those guys. Stutzel.
Well, I mean, that's right. That's my point, too, about the timing. You know, you don't know. And sometimes you land on third base and you don't hit a triple. That's not to diminish Kyle Davidson's plan or anything else, but right now, the first piece, which was predominantly based on luck, has happened. The thing about what – and we have to move forward. We usually talk too much on certain things and get going, but this has to be brought up. Danny Wirtz, to a lesser degree, Rocky Wirtz, over his eyeballs, was in on Stan Bowman. The interesting thing about Stan Bowman not to choose that direction, maybe he was too comfortable. Al McIsaac might have got fired. McDonough might have got fired. But it wouldn't have surprised me if Stan Bowman was still the kingfish, because they were over their eyes into Stan Bowman. They gave him an extension while things were falling apart. They created another title for him. The next step for Stan Bowman was, after he got a little bored, was not to be the GM. Then he could pick a GM, and that's another person that he could fire. That's another layer of security. Stan Bowman would have still been here and still been doing everything. So when you say, well, Danny Wirtz's plan was Stan Bowman. Now, they ended up with Kyle Davidson, who Stan Bowman hired, and we've talked a little bit about their relationship. But like I say, this is, you need a lot of luck. But now you also need to get some experience in here and some hockey knowledge, someone that could pick out talent, have an eye for talent that isn't being utilized in other places, that could maybe come on the cheap, or you could take advantage of other teams that are getting squeezed. The same thing could be, you know, there may be an assistant coach out there that's well thought of, that's in a, he's landlocked. He can't go anywhere. Maybe that's a guy that you could bring into Rockford. There's a lot of things that could happen here that need to happen. But I don't want to take this away from the points you were trying to make. I have something else I want to bring up, but I'll hold on to it and you could go ahead.
Okay. Well, before we might as well move on. There's a lot of stuff we could talk about and go over. I think let's try to stay topical to what's going on right now and the, what's next for the Blackhawks, obviously. And that's the exciting thing to me. If, and I think part of, you know, that stare on Kyle Davidson's face as they waited to find out what card was going to be drawn for number one. And then afterwards was the reality of how big of a difference that was going to be. And, you know, we were told, I talked about this, like after I watched that World Juniors, we were told, we were led to believe that, oh, it doesn't matter where you wind up, 1 through 5, you're going to get a great player. It's the deepest draft. And then to see how some folks, like the Blackhawks private draft or the lottery party at the FanDuel Sports Bar at the Sportsbook at the United Center, the Chuggos, you know, other fans that recorded themselves or went on Twitter right afterwards with their reactions. If it was no, like if there was no big difference, like you saw the way they reacted when it was number one. So the difference between number one and number two, and this is not to demean Adam Fantilli or Leo Carlson, they'll probably be fine players, but the difference between one and two, especially procedurally for the Blackhawks and how you move forward, was so great. And with, if it's number two and it's Fantilli, like that's another year of the Blackhawks treading water, likely tanking and going nowhere and having to deal with all of that. Another year of, oh, you know, can you really survive this? You know, all the questions that would come up and the frustrations and all of that and talk about, like, look at this team tanking again. But now it's like you have Bedard and there's all, like I said before, it's a reset. This is the reset that they wanted. It's the reset. And it also, and I'll poise this to you before we get into roster stuff, we talked privately before we went on the air, and it's a valid question: do they tank again? Tank again? I mean, but you have Bedard, right? Like you have the attraction, and we talked about this before. Bedard to a franchise easily is worth $300 to $500 million over his rookie contract. Just him alone, what he's worth to a franchise. And Jamie Faulkner can't wait to run to the media and talk about all the season tickets she's selling in the hours after the lottery, right? So they have the attraction. It gives them the ability really to do whatever they want for a year. So they have the license now to tank again. The important thing to know is that they really only have one more year where they can truly do that and be that bad, and it's a gamble anyway because you can only win the lottery twice in a 5-year span. So, you know, if this doesn't work, like if whatever direction they go and in 3 years they have that Colorado Avalanche season where, you know, like totally unexpected, they're terrible. And for Colorado, that yielded Cale Makar and changed their franchise for the foreseeable future. Like you can tank again, but if you tank again and you win the lottery, that's it for a 5-year span. You can't win the lottery again. It's a gamble, but they do have the license to do it now because the excitement's there for Bedard.
Well, they sold the tickets, so that, you know, that's a big part. In every way he affected things, the perception, the TV ratings, the anticipation of what could be. My point is, you don't need to set out the tank. I mean, how freaking good are you going to be? You're $40 million under the cap now. You've lost Taves, Juju Carrera, Anthony Seal, Robinson, Buddy. I'm looking at a list of the UFAs. Then you've got RFAs that have that you control, but they have arbitration rights. But I don't see how they're going to hurt you. You know, Kurashev, Anderson, Wagner, Bork. You know, those guys are RFAs. RFA is Caleb Jones. Ian Mitchell's an RFA. But, so my point is, I mean, you don't have to set out the tank. You need to build a roster. My point in saying this is, I'd be on my toes. I would not pass up someone because it's too early to get good. This is a long road. You need to put pieces together here. Some of them won't be here when you finally make the playoffs, but some may. Like we were talking earlier, just real quick, I'll bring this up. The formula has been the teams that have been repetitively very good, basically drafted two Hall of Fame players back-to-back or either very close together in the last 15 years or so. Go back and see who's won the cup. Okay, so you may not get someone who's like a 1-2-3 pick, but it could turn out that way. But you have to have your eyes open. Like, for example, you need two stud defensemen. Is Seth Jones one? I mean, he's 29 now. Is he could he be a stud defenseman and be there for you in 4 or 5 years? I don't know, maybe. You know, I certainly think he has the ability to be a true number one defenseman. But like what Florida did, Florida went and got Brandon Montour from Buffalo, a late second round pick for a third round draft pick. He plays 29 minutes a night now. They were talking about him on the radio. He's as right now, you'd have to say he's as good or maybe better than Ekblad. Those are their two studs. Now, maybe they scouted him. Maybe they realized in Anaheim he never really fulfilled what they were looking for. Then their teams went south. They go to Buffalo. That's been a shit show for, a dozen years or more. You know, so it's like you look for an opportunity. You don't pass on someone saying, I'm going to make myself better than I want to be now. You look to take advantage of others, the misfortune of others who are getting squeezed. And these analytic people that you have, maybe they point something out that others would miss. But when they get here, you're going to have to coach them up. You're going to hope that it's a Johnny Oduya type of trade where he's better here than he was anywhere he's ever been before. Things like that need to happen, whether you make the playoffs in 3 years from now, 6 years from now, 7 years from now. You can't just say, I'm not going to make that trade. I don't need him now. I want to be bad for a while. You can't control the timeline to that degree.
Well, and it's control is an interesting thing because there was and I guess his exit interviews with the media, Kyle Davidson, one of the questions that he was asked was, what has he learned over the course of his first full season as a general manager. And I thought it was interesting because I also thought he was kind of telling on himself, Kyle Davidson was, when in his answer, and I'm paraphrasing, but this is going to be pretty close, was he learned that he cannot control things that happen. And one of the things that he said that he learned that he can't control was a player's trade value, which I thought he was telling on himself when it came to Patrick Kane because – you know, you could get into a separate conversation about the Rangers flame out in the playoffs. But, you know, I mean, Kane had always...
Take it a step further back. He told on himself with Alex DeBrincat.
Right.
Because I think that was a big... I'll let you keep going. But that, to me, my estimation of Kyle Davidson jumped up steps up when I heard you told me, and then I read it. That is key for a young guy to admit he didn't know. Nothing wrong with that. Don't make the same mistakes over and over again. And that was telling, and that was correct, because those stories that I just didn't pull out of my rectum with what he was asking for DeBrincat, I I'd make a real strong bet that what I had was right. And it seems like if you read through what the chatter was, he was asking for a lot for him, and then he had to settle. Go ahead, I interrupted, but I had to bring that up.
No, you're right, and I'm glad you did. And you know, and you're right, as a young gentleman, that's encouraging. If you're a Blackhawks fan and you don't really like this conversation because it's, you know, whatever you think of it, but the point is that it's encouraging that Davidson did admit that, hey, I got something wrong. I learned this, and hopefully he means what he says. And in practice, he learns from that mistake going forward. And to your point, you know, and I wonder too, it's important that, yeah, like you can't control timing. Things are going to happen. Look at New Jersey. New Jersey's struggling with Carolina because Carolina's got great structure. They're very, very well coached, the Carolina Hurricanes are. And they're struggling to get anything going against a really strong, well-coached team. But they're ahead of schedule. And there's nothing wrong with being ahead of – there's nothing wrong with being ahead of schedule. And you know what? In 2009, the Blackhawks getting to the Western Conference Final, they were ahead of schedule. And there's nothing wrong with being ahead of schedule. And for the Blackhawks to really make this work, if they're going to if they're going to win a cup, doing it the way that they're planning on doing, which is having essentially it's like you acquire all these draft picks and you're going to hope that a bunch of them turn into NHL players and they're a part of your nucleus going forward. They're not following the path that the Blackhawks did in 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10. They're following like what the Chicago Cubs just did, where your window is actually only a few years. And then everybody's going to come up for contracts, and the organization is going to have the option to say, we can't pay all these guys, and they tear it back down, and they give themselves even more time. That looks to be where they're headed. But in the meantime, you got to make good hockey decisions, and you want to have a good team. And that's the thing with Luke Richardson. Luke Richardson, he was a very good coach by all indications of a very bad team. And that's not that hard to be, like, because you've got a bunch of guys that are just happy to be in the NHL. You got a bunch of guys that are happy to be in larger roles, and then other players who know that they're playing to be traded to a playoff contender. So you've got a lot of motivated guys in that scenario. And so it's not
Ty
that hard.
Domi, right.
Max Domi.
Right.
It's not
Max
hard.
Domi, I'm sorry.
Jared Tinordi shouldn't even be in the NHL, like, and he's in the NHL. Like, so there are guys that are motivated, and it's not hard to come to work every day in that environment, even though, everybody around you is talking about how horrible, the team is and all that. So, but now you got to give Luke players to play with, because the other thing that you need to know is once you give him assets, once you give him skilled players and options, is he going to be a good coach in that environment? And that's important to know too. The longer you drag out and just have him coach, a similar group to this past year, the less you're going to know about him. And that's important too.
That's a hard job for him, because what he's gotten from the AHL team, Cole Gutman aside, who seems to understand. But these, if you notice, and it's not coincidence, the players that come here and stand out were with other organizations. Sam Lafferty, Hagel. At some point, someone should take a look at that, and say, geez. at least they know how to play to a fundamental extent. I hate to make it sound so simple, he has to really coach them up here. Their neutral zone coverage, all this other stuff. And some are easier to teach and others aren't. And when a guy gets to be 24, 25, 26, I'm not saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but in some respects, it doesn't work as easily, for sure. So that's part of it. And it gets back to the original point. You can't control how fast players are going to become good or effective NHL players. The issue the last time was that they had a bunch of guys who got good all basically at once. And that caused problems with the salary cap, and then they screwed up, you know, the qualifying offers, and they had to overpay on that. But they had a strong handful of guys who got to be, you know, type of players other teams would want on their team. I mean, it's all at once. Now, the other thing is, too, some of those guys were Memorial Cup winners, this and that. You know, you want some sort of a pedigree, too, if you're, you know, you would like Michigan to win a title with Frankie Nazar there or something like that. Now you have a lot of young guys. You don't know if Korchinski's going to take 5 years, 2 years, 7 years. Is he going to be here? You know, it's like I say, he has a lot of flexibility now. He has somewhat of a cushion because the place isn't going to be half empty. Look to take advantage of situations and hope your scouting is right. And also, I would be aggressive at this draft. You know, to your point, you know, everyone had this draft being 10, 12 players deep. Then it was 6, 8 players deep, you know, for like true game-changing players. I don't know if that any of that, I don't know. To me, the one player that's interesting that's going to be drafted somewhere between, I would think, 2 and 4 is Michkov. But if he has the opportunity, he's got 11 picks. Can't take all those picks.
Al, I saw a legit prospect guy just, I think, yesterday making the argument that number 2 pick should be Leo Carlson, you know? And I mean,
cool.
You see that
yeah.
kind of stuff this time, but like, again, to your point, like the point we were making earlier, it was like, it's Connor Bedard and everybody else. And now there's arguments about where should these guys go? Earlier in the year, you saw, somebody was saying I'm not sure that Fantilli's not the best player in this draft ultimately. Mm. And now nobody's making that argument, but, a couple things. Hagel, you got to give the Blackhawks credit for, because that was Derek King, Rockford. Hagel was kind of a guy, you could probably compare him a little bit to Dave Bolin, a guy who had success scoring in juniors. It was different. Hagel came from the WHL. Bolin came from the O. But guy who had success, was a good offensive player, and then he had to change his game, and give him credit. I give Derek King credit for that one. But Korchinski, I think we're going to know in the next – I think within 2 years you're going to know. Is he – you know, I hate to keep bringing up Cale Makar because it's not fair. Just let these guys – that's the other thing. Just let these guys develop into what they're going to develop and help them. That's the thing with development. I think we're the Blackhawks – again, they seem to be making this mistake again – is just let these players become who they're going to become and give them the tools and help guide them on their own path – instead of trying to make them something that you want them to be. Jalen Lipin, the Blackhawks have just told him that they want him to mold himself into they want him to study Brandon Hagel and be another Brandon Hagel. That's the wrong thing to do. That's the wrong way to go about it. They made that mistake with Philip Deneau. They told Philip Deneau that they wanted him, they sat him down, they wanted him to study Marcus Kruger tapes. Because that was what they wanted Philip Deneau to be. And I'm sitting there watching Deneau, and I know that he has – I mean, yeah, you could make comparisons to Kruger, but it was obvious he had more potential than, like, offensively. He could be more than what Marcus Kruger, but they tried to mold him into something that they wanted based on something that they already or they used to have, and that's wrong. It's the wrong way to go about it. And it appears as though they still have that mindset. And they got to get away from that.
Well, they got to get a coach, I think. But and then would be interesting to see what happens there. You got to be in a real warm and fuzzy mood. I mean, I'll give them some credit for Hagel, but it's like 59 games in the eight. But I guess you could learn things. I'll give them some credit for that. But I still would. That's the type of guy they didn't need to trade. But, you know, they got the draft picks and stuff. I mean, and I don't want to hear that it was a good trade for both. If you want to say it was a good trade for both, you didn't win the trade because you gave up by far the best player who could play on a top six or the top line on a very good team. But beyond all that, your point about guys coming out of juniors, That's exactly right, Steve. You could go all the way back. Players that make it here learn how to be hockey players. They Steve Ludzik scored a lot of goals in juniors. You know, players like that, then they come up and they're third, fourth line players, but they're NHL players. They're not like hanging on by their teeth to be in the NHL. They are NHL players. They're not like a lot of the guys that you have here now that are one step from Europe. You know, so you have to upgrade everything. And again, he has so much flexibility. It's just, I wouldn't be passive because time flies. You never know what the situation is with these young guys that you drafted. You don't know injury thing. If you have the opportunity, especially on guys that they're not old, you know, I heard something yesterday that does make sense. One of the first things that, you know, it was Dave Nonis on NHL radio. And he was saying, well, what Kyle Davidson needs to do is he needs to surround this kid with the right type of players. And that doesn't, we're not necessarily talking about hockey ability. You want him to be around players that have the winning know-how, that maybe have won a cup or have gone deep into the playoffs, that are stand-up individuals that'll help him be an NHL player. Like when Talon had Marty Lapointe, you know, guy who won Stanley Cups, a guy that, you know, was the toughest guy in the room. Players listen to him, a stand-up individual. Someone like that will be brought in here. Because a lot of people are saying this kid's going to also slide right in and be a center. Talking to someone who was a scout and coach and said that wouldn't be fair to him to put him at center right away at his size and age. They probably would put him as a winger. So you need somebody to distribute the puck that knows what they're doing with them. And that doesn't have to be an all-star player, but you need someone with some kind of know-how. You know, and Reichel, who was supposed to be a center, never plays center. So, you know, they need some players. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting to see what that roster looks like on opening night.
Well, Reichel, I mean, we can go back to the Rockford Ice Hawks. My God. The one team that I did pay attention to, Blackhawks, Blackhawks, as I said before, I had no interest in what they were doing this year. It was completely bullshit. And there was no reason to watch them. They gave me no reason to watch them. But Rockford's a different story. You know, they have guys there that they need to develop. They tried. I mean, they did. Alex Vlasic, they did try. I mean, with him, they were putting him in all sorts of different situations. They made him quarterback the power play at the last quarter of the year. He wasn't qualified to do that. It didn't really go well. But they put him in that position. They put him in a position so he could learn and hopefully grow. That's not something they did with Lucas Reichel, which is notable. And we've talked about this before. I think there's differing opinions about what Lucas Reichel ultimately would be in the NHL. Is he the Blackhawks have differing opinions about whether they think he's a center or he's a wing. He's played center almost exclusively 2 years in a row in Rockford. This year, it happened to be probably more so because they had no center depth, which was a choice. I mean, but, you know, so he was at center all year, but every time he gets called up to the NHL, he plays wing. And they think he's a winger, but he plays center in Rockford. Okay, so what does he learn? You know, are you really preparing him? Or, you know, I don't know. It doesn't – I mean, there will be people that say, well, there's value in playing center. You know, there's nothing wrong, but – you know, he goes up. I mean, it's like that game he got called up on emergency. Taves got sick in New Jersey, and he gets called up, and he jumps over the bench, and he goes out on out on the ice. And, I mean, his head, he's a center, right, because he's playing center in Rockford. He jumps out into the ice off the bench on a line change. He has a missed assignment, and New Jersey scores. And it's like, yeah, it's a missed assignment, but, you know, I mean, he's
out of position.
Like
he hasn't
he's
played
out of
a
position.
Position.
Like,
you know.
I mean, you could blame it on him. It's, you know, he should have picked up his guy, but his instincts were he's jumping over the boards. He's a center, and that's.
But the question is why though? Why wouldn't he be at center? It's not like you were so loaded, and your center was out. You know, that's what I mean. It's like there's mixed signals. Your point about putting a kid like right now the soup of the day seems like it's Phillips on defense and Vlasic. But every year for the last 5 years, there's always been a different one or two guys that they seem to be focused on, and by Christmas of the following season, you don't hear of them again. It's like, you know what
well,
I mean?
That's
a problem. You got to stick to someone here.
But here's the problem. Like, only one of those guys probably is going to be up next year, because Korchinski is going to be in the NHL. I mean, that's not a question in my mind. He's going to be probably first or second, you know, left side defenseman.
Well, they can do that Shane Wright thing with him, can't they? Where they, like you were talking about, I got in a discussion on Twitter the other day.
I don't see how you wait around, though. I mean, it's.
Oh, you're saying that? Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You don't think they'll make that choice?
No, it's, you know, there's no reason for him to go back. I mean, yeah, you can, like, why screw around with it? Just let him play. And that's the answer. Just let him play. I mean, you could screw around and, you know, play him every other game and then sit him out 2 weeks and then send him for a conditioning assignment to the AHL and then send him to the world, you know, the world championships. And then, you know, like, you could do all of that, but why? Just let him play. But the problem you're going to have is, like, if it's Korchinski and Vlasic and Tenorti, those are all your left shot defensemen right there. You got Murphy, if he's still around, and obviously Seth Jones on the right side. There's, you know, the Blackhawks don't have, you know. So either Vlasic or Phillips is probably going to wind up back in Rockford, at least to start the year, unless Tenorti's hurt, which is obviously a possibility. But, I mean, getting back to Reichel, again, like, when I look at the way they develop prospects and the decisions that they make, part of some of the decisions, again, going back to Davidson saying he can't control stuff. He tried to control Rockford this year. He tried to manipulate that situation and have it be where they were set up for a long playoff run. If you notice what he did at the AHL trade deadline, he kind of gutted the team and created these spots about before all this happened. The plan in Rockford, and one of the reasons why they're holding Reichel down, wasn't just to have Reichel's going to over-ripen and there's nothing, you know, nothing wrong with taking your time. And the plan was that Reichel was going to be there. He was going to be a part of that. Yeah, he was going to have the experience of the playoff run in the AHL. But it was also so when Lipin and maybe Del Mastro and these other guys, Ludwinski got hurt so it didn't happen. He was creating spots for his amateur players that were going to come up on PTOs and ATOs. He was creating spots for those guys to play in the playoffs. But what happened was it backfired because the last 2 weeks of the season, they were playing for their playoff lives, and those spots didn't open up. So that last week of the season, when Lipin was there in Rockford, he couldn't play because every game was a must win. And then they played the first round series, the play-in series against Iowa. They won 2-0, and then they had a week to practice, and then Lipin went into the lineup for the Texas series because that was the whole purpose of it. And he tried to control that situation. Holding Reichel down was a part of that, and it didn't play out exactly the way he wanted it to. My other problem with Reichel is if you're having this argument, this internal debate about whether he's a first-liner or ultimately he winds up being a middle-six guy, okay, well then – Why aren't you putting him on the penalty kill? You got Vlasic playing out of place on the power play. Why isn't Reichel getting more experience in different situations? That would be one of the easiest things to do if you're going to let this guy play 2 years in the minors. He played 2 years in the minors. He never played on the penalty kill. And if he's going to be a middle six in the NHL and he doesn't play penalty kill, well, now you're entering territory of, well, he's not multidimensional enough. And, you know, like, you're creating a situation where you're down on the guy because he's not versatile enough when you never gave him a fucking chance to be versatile. What are you doing?
Yeah, and then when he does come up, he doesn't play the position he's played most of the year. It's – I don't know. I mean, I question, too, like – I think, if you know, not going to get a betting line on it, but Ian Mitchell, I mean, what
well,
are
he's
they doing
gone.
With him?
He's gone.
I think he's going to be gone, yeah.
To me, I was surprised that they didn't just send him back down to Rockford for the playoff run and just let him have a great run, and maybe you could trade his rights for something. I was a little bit surprised by that, but again, that's, you know, he's not a part of their future, so that wasn't really the plan. The other thing I want to get to about Rockford, and I'm very strong on this. I watched them all year. I watched this playoffs. I'm very, very strong on this. They have to get – Kyle Davidson has to get serious about the coaching in Rockford. You had another year where you didn't have prospects that really got any better. You know, yeah, Vlasic, there's moments. You know, he's tall, he's lank, you know, he's lengthy, he's got a good stick, he gets beat a lot, his gaps, you know, he's got to work on his footwork. He's a good skater, but he's got to work on his footwork. He is poised, and I've said this before, I mean, the thing that you like about his development is he's very comfortable out there, he's poised, he has confidence, but he doesn't always make the right decision. I mean, he's carrying the puck more than he should as a defenseman. Get that puck up the ice. Get everybody moving. The Rockford's biggest problem this year, and it comes back to coaching, is they play with no pace whatsoever. They have fast guys. They have skilled guys, but they don't play with any pace. And, you know, part of that comes back to the defense being disciplined to get the puck and move it. Move the puck, not skate with the puck. And that a problem. Time and time and time again with this team and how they don't get any sustained zone time. It that comes back to coaching. And another thing that I nearly lost my mind about was, and Anders Sorensen, maybe he's a nice guy, but in the division semi-series game one against Texas, Rockford, it comes down to the end of the game. They're down a goal. They were up a goal going into that period, if I remember correctly, but they were down a goal. They have a bad third period, but now you're down to the last 2 minutes. You're looking to pull Soderblom, who, by the way, today the Blackhawks just signed to a contract extension. Got it. I think he's right at $1 million. You know, he was going to be part of the – Soderblom was going to be a part of the goaltending tandem next year, whoever it is with him. You know, that's to be expected. It's time. You got to see what he's going to do. He's not.
So Mrazek and him, that's like Mrazek and him is $4.5 million for that spot. That's doable.
Yeah. So, I mean, Mrazek's going to be hurt a lot, so they're going to need a third goal. They're going to need a third goalie. I don't know who that would be, but, so it'll be Comesso and maybe Stauber and Rockford. So even though Stauber, they had no confidence in Stauber down the stretch. He never played. So maybe they'd move on from him. We don't know. But so they get down to the last 2 minutes of the game. They're looking to pull Stauber, and with about a minute and 40 left, they pull Stauber. Rockford finally gets the puck in the offensive zone. They're, you know, moving it around. Texas gets the puck. They take a shot at the empty net. They ice the puck. Now, I don't have it all in front of me, but there were three guys.
Soderblom was in the net, right?
No, he was out. They had pulled for the extra attacker. They were playing.
Okay,
they were playing
6 on 5. You said Stauber. Okay, no problem. Go ahead.
So they were playing 6-on-5, and Texas is gassed. Three of the Texas players had been on the ice for over a minute. One of them, well over a minute, Riley Tufte, and their defense, which was their number one defense, who logs the most minutes, they were on the ice for over a minute. Petrovic and another guy, Gleason. Okay, so they're an offensive zone faceoff, a minute left to play, and, you know, Texas is gassed. What does Rockford do? They call a timeout. I couldn't believe it, Al. I couldn't believe Anders Sorensen called timeout. And, like, let's think about this analytically for a second. Rockford has two scoring lines. Their third line, which was DJ Buzdecker, Buddy Robinson, and who was on the other side of that line, doesn't matter. That, like, that was, you could consider that, like, if you were watching all those games, it was probably their best line up to that point of the playoffs. They have two scoring lines and that line. Texas just iced the puck. They're gassed. And he called a timeout to draw up a play. Okay, now analytically, you're thinking about this. You know, people understand this, right? You go from a situation where Texas is tired and they're just wanting to win the faceoff and get the puck out of the zone so they can change and get fresh bodies on the ice because it's 6-on-5, right? You right. go from that scenario to you give the Texas players a blow. Now they're refreshed. Now if they win that faceoff, they're going for the jugular because now they're not tired. So you have you have a faceoff, which is a 50-50 scenario anyway. Rockford's not good on faceoffs. Luke Philp, who is their best faceoff guy, still isn't that much better than 50%. So you have a 50-50 chance of winning the faceoff. All because you had to draw up a play. You had all week to drill and practice this very scenario. You had all week. You had all week that you knew that you were playing Texas. You had a week worth of practices. You could have prepared for this situation. And he called timeout to draw up a play. He's an amateur. I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous. So what happens? Texas wins the draw. Gleason, I believe it was Gleason, he rings the puck off the glass. Vlasic is too slow. The puck gets out. Marek Studenich beats everybody to the puck. Empty net goal. Game over. 6 seconds that took. And then after the game, Sorensen goes before the assembled media, who, of course, nobody asks him about the timeout and why he took that timeout. Nobody does. They ask him about Lucas Reichel. And he throws Lucas Reichel under the bus. Now, yeah, Reichel hadn't scored in the playoffs up to that point. In that game, he had two times where he did a drop pass to nobody and the puck wound up in the back of Rockford's net. One of them was on the patented everybody standing around while one player skates all the way through the neutral zone and into the zone and then makes a drop pass. They do it 10 times a game. And they do it against the same defense scheme that Rockford employs, but yet they can't handle the defensive scheme that they practice against. So,
and at that time, Reichel was hurt.
Well, that's the other point. So he throws Reichel under the bus, which on the surface is like, okay, it's fair. I don't know that I would have answered it that way, but it's fair. The coach, you know, right to do that if he wants. He's pushing buttons, right? But then the series is over, and we come to find out that at the time, he knew Reichel was hurt. Reichel, we found out after the playoffs that Reichel got hurt in game two of the play-in series. He's hurt, and the coach throws him under the bus. I mean,
yeah.
That tells you all you need to know about that coach.
I was thinking if they would have dropped in the draft to 5 or something, and that somehow Reichel would have been part of a trade package or something like that. I don't know, maybe I'm being too down on it because he's a Bowman draft pick, but yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, Kyle Davidson didn't have a nephew or anything on the Chicago mission that this guy coached, did he? I mean, there's no –
Davidson
mean,
would not.
He inherited it. He inherited it. Yeah,
but
right?
here's the problem. There appears to be a circle of guys there that all worked underneath Bowman. A lot of them were hired by Bowman. Some of them were hired by Dale. That this is their opportunity. Some of them believe that they knew better. They had to, I mean, in any situation like that, you're going to have people who have differing ideas. They don't agree with, you know, the guy at
right.
the top that's making decisions. That's not foreign. That's a regular thing. But this is the inmates running the asylum, and this is a test. If Kyle understands what's happening in Rockford and change, like you cannot, whether they got Bedard or not, you have to figure out development. Like, you cannot keep making the same mistakes over and over again. it will do him in just like it did Bowman in. So, like,
you have to pay attention to that. That's a key element. You know, with all the hubbub of, you know, tank this and tank that, you get the players, but when the Hawks got the players, they had Yanni and Haviland that were the AHL coaches. Both solid hockey coaches. So, I mean, that's what I'm saying. He needs to get the key to that lock, hopefully this summer, I would hope, because you need that. It's fundamental. And the people that think, well, you know, maybe you just tank and won't care, don't worry about tanking with this, because unless he rebuilds totally, and he can't do it, the defense, they're never going to score enough goals to get close to the playoffs, because they get no offense from the defense. I mean, Seth Jones can only do too much, and that's Seth Jones' problem. He tries to do too much. But, I mean, he's been in that predicament, basically, most of his NHL career. But they need to rebuild that, and they need to get players that could skate and pass, and you don't have to carry the puck to the blue line. You need the quick decision-makers, because the offense starts from the defensive zone, and they're an illustration of that not happening at all. And there's only so much you could coach with that. You have to have the ability. So it would be nice if he found it all kind of smells how that all went down, because they had the guy in Rockford that they thought so much of him that they allowed him to come up. They were kind of stuck. There was really nothing else to do at that point. You can't get someone out of college. You can't get really anybody else unless you're going to pay a bajillion dollars for a coach and you want him to tank. That isn't going to happen. Those guys were available. They weren't going to do that. So, I mean, Derek King, he got his chance. But then, oddly enough, they don't let him go back down. We talked about this before. It's like the Woodcroft situation with Edmonton. From what I understand, they brought him up, put him in a tough spot, and told him basically that if he didn't succeed, he had a job in the AHL. They understood what they were doing. Well, he succeeded, and he still has the job. And Derek King liked to be put in as like the third wheel here as an assistant coach. You need coaches here, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I mean, if you know, Derek King, by all accounts, is, you know, he's a good AHL coach. He works well with talent down there. And if they were to make that move, you know, I think that would be encouraging. You know, the AHL is hard now, and I witnessed this firsthand when I was there all the time and talking to people. It's like the way the Blackhawks understand Bowman did it, and my understanding is it's gone forward under Davidson, is they got their hands all over what's happening there, including lineups and who's playing in mm-hmm. what situation and all that. And for a coach, that's a difficult position to be in, because the coach, you know, what people are seeing is the results on the ice. They're seeing individual player performances. Are they improving? Are they not? And at the end of the day, the guys on the bench, they have to believe in the coach's authority. And what was happening under, you know, sort of the latter end of Bill Peters and some of Bill Peters' frustrations, it was happening the entire time that Ted Dent was there, was, you know, you have these guys coming in and out of the locker room, and the players' heads are on a swivel. They don't know who's in charge. They don't know who to listen to. And you got to get away from that, too. You got to have somebody there who's the coach. You can have your instructors. You can have your developmental coaches come in, you know, dip in and out. You can have them be a part of practice. But the coach has to be the authority, and they got to get to that. I mean, that would be
– keep your hands in the pot. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a really good head start.
You got to sell someone, though, I think, because it is a very difficult job, and you don't get paid a lot of money, and it kind of the same way with an assistant in the NHL. This isn't like the NFL. You know, they don't give people permission to go and interview for other jobs. So it's almost like you have to be sold on the organization, be comfortable with your situation, and see a path where this could make you a better coach and give you more exposure, you know. So it's not an easy position to fill, and some
times, a lot, not sometimes, often, those guys are just AHL coaches. To say, in the NHL, the assistant coaches, the head coach doesn't want that guy to leave if he thinks a lot of him. And the general manager doesn't want him to leave either, because then the head coach has to retrain someone or whatever to mesh with him. So a lot of times those guys can't interview for a head coaching job. It just depends on their contract situation, who they're with, whatever. So it's not an easy path to the NHL, but they need coaches. They need that, because this stuff isn't like, you can't give a kid a book and say, okay, let's go to the gym and, you know, go, you know, here's your training regimen. They need to be coached, and you have to be able to communicate with them. It's a big job, and it's an important piece to everything that seems to get overlooked often. And it can't be overlooked here anymore, because, you know, it isn't coincidence that they haven't really developed an NHL defenseman since Johnsson that's made an impact here. That's a long time ago. You know, just one thing. I mean, so in any event, we'll see what he does.
Well,
hopefully
and
that's
again,
on his radar to change.
I mean, Korchinski's got the offensive pedigree, and he's going to be an NHL defenseman. The question is he a number one, you know, defenseman who's going to log all the minutes and play? You're not going to be afraid to play him in all the situations, or is he Noah Hanifin? Like,
for Brian Campbell.
Right. And then, you know, the other thing, too.
That's not disparaging to either one of those. I mean, you need that element, right?
Right.
Just don't think he is your number one when he's really a good number three.
Right.
That could play in a power play. Right.
And is, like, are decisions made, and again, like, this kind of goes back to Reichel, is, you know, my thing with Reichel is always been, like, I'm not so sure he's a first-line player, but he's definitely a piece. Right? Like, and you need pieces. You can't just say, well, he's not the first line left winger that we thought he was or hoped he was going to be, so we're going to move on. Like, you can't think that way all the time. So, like, if he's
because you don't have too many pieces here. It's not like you could say you could overlook anyone. You don't, your pieces are young unknowns, really. I mean, they have some pedigree where they're at, but there's still a lot of variables. I mean, that's why you need those decision makers and the coachability to get a guy in here that could steer young players. I would hope. I don't know.
Well, the other thing, too, you brought up Brian Campbell, and I was actually – something I was thinking about bringing up today was – and I've been talking to for months now about this very thing. It's like, if you think back and how – like, there are similarities, of course. I mean, the Blackhawks are trying to replicate what they did before, and it's a strategy, okay? So,
they're trying to replicate the result, you know. It's a different situation.
Yeah. But you brought up Brian Campbell. Brian Campbell was a key piece to the 2010 Cup. Now, obviously, not going forward, but that first Cup, he was a key piece to that Cup. If you were to run that whole situation, like you were to run that today, would the Blackhawks even sign Brian Campbell? Maybe not.
Well, that's what I was talking about 45 minutes ago. You have to be able to discern a player that will help you now and into the future, and that you could possibly, given the opportunity, will be better than he has been. Brian Campbell was the top tick free agent that year, because he was everything on Buffalo. He was Seth Jones on the bad teams in Columbus, but he wasn't a true first pairing defenseman, because he wasn't good enough defensively. But I'll tell you what, you know, the difference between playing five minutes less a night, not getting the number one matchups, and being able to play on the power play, I'm talking 5 minutes less full strength, and being on the power play, is all the difference in the world, and he was very good at what he was, no doubt.
And so you're going to have, you know, and the other thing too is, I mean, that wasn't a Stan Bowman signing, but Stan Bowman, one of the things, and you know, I mean, the people that want to make it out to be like Stan Bowman never did anything good. I mean, let's be fair and honest about it. Stan Bowman did some good things. He did a lot of bad things. But, you know, he drafted Lucas Reichel, he and Mark Kelly. You know, he drafted Ethan Del Mastro, he and Mark Kelly. So, like, they're a part of this conversation right now. And it turns me off whenever somebody's, you know, like, we can have these discussions about, you know. But one of the good things that Bowman did was he was able to work trades for contracts that he needed to get, you know, he needed to move on. And that's something that will Davidson be able to do that? Is that part of his learning process of being able to control trade value and stuff? Will that carry forward into he has a contract that he needs to move? Maybe that contract in 4 years is Seth Jones. You know, maybe
well,
it's somebody.
Johnny Oduya was, I mean, you talked about, you know, other players, Brian Campbell. I mean, to get Johnny Oduya in that trade, which, you know, their top four defensemen, no one had four defensemen like the Blackhawks had, because the guys that the Jamerson and Duya could be a first pair on it pretty much any team. I mean, when you look at it, that was a big trade that Bowman had. I mean, he just got caught being a little too comfortable maybe and not paying attention to what got them there. And what got them there was having Keith and Seabrook in place, who were draft picks, that they were fortunate that they had people there to help them develop, and then the development of the young guys that came up all at once. And then he was a decent hole filler when they needed to acquire a guy here or there. But he forgot what started the ball rolling, I think, and didn't concentrate enough on that. And that needs to change because, you know, it's been, what, 12 years or 13 years for Buffalo? They, you know, they were second in the 2005 with draft with Eichel. You know, it's not, you know, not like I say, relish this tremendous opportunity, franchise changing, get lucky. Nothing to be embarrassed about to say you got lucky, but realize there's wood to chop here, and time goes by quickly, and you can't control injuries and different things like that. So it's like I'd be on my toes now, and you know what? I'd be aggressive. And if you really believe this is a deep draft, and I'm not talking about the first six guys. I'm talking about numbers 10 through 30 being a step above or two of what you would normally get in that range. Be aggressive.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And let's just take a look at what the Blackhawks have. I mean, they've got four second-rounders. They've got Tampa's pick in the first round. That was part of the Brandon Hagel trade. They've got four second-rounders. You should probably package some of those picks.
What's the Mrazek deal with Toronto? That was a first-rounder one for next year, or is that in play this year?
Well, it was.
Am I missing something?
I don't know. I have to look that up. Off the top of my head, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, you know, that's the other thing, and we talked about in one of the last podcasts we did. Like you know, you can't develop. Like, there's not a scenario where you're going to have 10 guys in Rockford that you develop all at the same time. There's just not enough ice time. And it's probably just not going to work that way. So you have to manage this. And, you know, Stan Bowman used to talk about the charts and how they, you know, they would, you know, knew when guys arrival, they had idea when guys arrival's time were going to be. And it was about having space for them and all that. You know, I don't know how much he stuck to that or anything like that, but it is important. I mean, you want when guys get there, you want there to be a place for them so there's an opportunity for them to grow and grow into whatever they're going to be. And if they're, you know, if they use all of these picks, I mean, you could spread it out a little bit by doing some college guys, doing a USHL guy, you could, you know, WH, you know, you could spread it out a little bit not all of them will arrive at the same time, but they're all going to kind of get there at a similar time. Not many players that are any good anyway spend all 4 years in college anymore. I mean, we just seen it now.
Mrazek was a 2022 first round pick.
Okay.
That's what they got.
So they should probably get aggressive.
That's right. They don't stay for 4 years usually, unless there's an injury involved or something like that.
Well, Ryder Ralston, like look at Notre Dame. Ryder Ralston came out because Ryder Ralston's, he's quick, and he has some upside. Landon Slaggart stayed, and I think we talked about this on a podcast. While I watched, the delayed World Juniors last summer, and he could not, like, he had no closing speed. Like, you know, I wouldn't call him slow, but his closing speed was just wasn't there. And he wasn't getting to pucks, and he wasn't closing gaps and stuff like that. And I didn't watch him at Notre Dame this year. It's not something I did. But that was a warning sign to me that he wasn't going to be, if he wasn't able to improve on that, wasn't going to be, and now it looks like they may not even sign him. So, and he's going back to Notre Dame for another year. So, not all these guys are going to pan out. So, and then even if they do and they all arrive at the same time, you're not going to be able to develop them all. So you have to either look at them as assets that you could potentially move or assets now that you can get a head start on surrounding Connor Bedard and Kevin Korchinski with some talent and guys that have
very
upside.
Fluid.
Look at what – it's not a same situation because, you're not afforded the same expansion draft that Seattle and Vegas were. But similar situations, they went out and acquired players that – just like the Blackhawks just did with this last year, where if you take a player from one situation and bring him into a situation where he has more opportunity, he'll get more ice time, targeting those players who do – are good players. They just don't put up points like a guy like Taylor Radish. He's putting up points, but is he a multi-dimensional player that you can grow with? Like, those are the guys, make hockey trades for those guys.
The Radish is putting up points with a really good shooting percentage, playing in situations that he wouldn't get on the majority of the teams. So then you have to look at that with a discerning eye, too. And what is he really like? Do you think anybody that's a UFA that was here last year coming back, would it just be Max Domi? Maybe.
Well, I don't know. I watched that Dallas game last night, and they were talking about Domi. I mean, I don't know if they had any inside information, the commentaries, but they were talking about Max Domi was playing for a contract where he could stay somewhere.
He's got to sign a four-year contract, right?
That's what he's looking for.
In his defense,
I'm not a Max Domi fan, but in his defense, looking at it from his point of view, I mean, he's bounced around quite a bit. At this point, I mean, he's playing to get a big contract so he could have some stability. And, if I was the Blackhawks, though, I'd be leery of that. I know it sort of worked out here for a year, but we're at, two-thirds of a year. But I don't know. I wouldn't be rushing to bring him back. But, I mean, they do have to spend money. I mean, that's the other thing. You expect the Blackhawks are gonna go out and acquire a contract of an injured player or something like that to get up to the cap, the minimum. And – they're going to bring in some more Nikita Zaitsev contracts probably,
The guy I would be in on, and I wouldn't be afraid to sign him long-term because he's at the right age to do it, and he never really wanted to leave, was DeBrincat. That situation with Ottawa was interesting. New ownership, deep pockets, getting a new stadium, although they still haven't decided, on a specific location, this and that. And the other thing, he's qualifies for $9 million. Okay. $9 million in Ottawa is a lot more money, new owners or not, than $9 million here. So it'd be interesting to see because they're not in a position where they could let him walk for free.
So unless they could sign him, you know, unless he likes it there,
because you talked about this with me privately, if he would have shot near his same shooting percentage as what he would have been, he would have been, what, 35 goals or so this year
on a team that started awful. All he had to do was shoot his career average, and he would have been right in the 40 ballpark. He may have fell just short, but he would have been right there on the doorstep. So he had a down shooting year, but there's no reason to be down on him. He's a good player. The thing that I would like to see DeBrincat get back to is being the all well-rounded player that he was in 1920 that got me so excited about him as a player, because he's
chasing down
and
catching
people
from
behind.
He can
do that stuff, right? He can do that stuff. I just like to see a coach challenge him to be that player, because he can. It's there. He can do it.
I'd make a move for him. He's the right profile. You know, even if it takes you 6-7 years to get to the playoffs, he's just turning over 30. If you sign him for that long, I mean. To me, he's a talent. You know, you could use someone like that if he were available. And, you know, there's not a lot of very good teams that can commit to that kind of money unless they're making more changes. I mean, there's going to be changes in Winnipeg for sure. Boston's up against it because they got to pay a penalty from this year. I don't know what that amounts to, but it amounts to something. So they're up against it. Even like for Kane, I mean, he'll find a place. Maybe if Toronto loses the series, like it seems like they're going to, you know, maybe, you know, a big guy or something will go from there and they'll take a swing at him. But it's going to be interesting to see, because this year you have teams that weren't expected necessarily to be cup contenders that are around still. So it's interesting, and they're getting a lot of experience, like New Jersey, like you said. To me, that would be a spot for Kane. I don't know if they could fit him, but they don't pay usually. It's going to be an interesting offseason, but I mean, I would hope that Davidson would take a look at the Brinkett option, because they might be able to, if he really wants to come back here, they might be able to get him at a decent price.
Well, to be clear too, because I think people are going to jump on you for this, is I don't see an offer sheet is an option. I think this, you would have to make a hockey trade. So
no, that's what I'm saying. No, I mean, it'd be like one of those deals where, like, what's his name? Just they did it with Meyer did it with New Jersey, kind of like that. No, it's not going to be. No, not in all. I don't mean in that regard. They're going to qualify him. He's $9 million to qualify for one more year. Then he's a free agent. So. You know, they got to.
And I don't think too. I don't think you should be shy. To your point, I don't think the Blackhawks should be shy about signing him to, you know, the full length of the contract. Because, again, to your point, like say you sign him in 4 years, 3-4 years from now, or even 5 years from now, you win the Stanley Cup, you win a couple of them, or you're a contender. Like at that
and
level,
you want to trade him. You could trade him.
And then after that, you want to trade him. You're going to be able to trade that contract to a team on the come, like a Blackhawks or a New Jersey. You're going to be able to trade that contract because he has all, as long as he's healthy, he has all that experience, and he's still, you
he's
know,
only 31 or something like that. Right.
Right? So you shouldn't be shy.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
No, he's the, I mean, to me, I don't care, you know, maybe he doesn't want to come back. I don't know. But I'm saying he's the type of guy, what, 25? If you could get him again for the right price, and maybe because there isn't a giant pool of buyers, because he's going to have to agree to an extension, right? Basically,
right.
Like Myers,
right.
they that was all, you know, he had buddies on the team, whatever. They knew they were going to sign him. It took him a weekend to do it. You know, that just wasn't, you know, that didn't come out of the clouds. So the long and short of it is that you may be able to get him and not give up as much as you think you would need to, because that's a heavy load. And some of these teams, they're up against it, and they're going to be up against it. And it's going to be interesting to see what Winnipeg's got to shuffle the deck there. But it's going to be interesting to see, like, what happens, like, with the Toronto. And then Matthews is a free agent the following year. Not this year, next year, right? After next year.
I mean, a guy like Matthews, maybe. I mean, see, with Bedard, you know, ultimately he winds up at center, probably. And, you know, like I said before, you know, he's not just a shooter. I watched him, when I watch him play, his vision, his ability to hold on to the puck, I mean, he's not just a shooter. He's going, like, it, you know, because I was listening to, I forget what podcast I was listening to, but they were talking about DeBrincat and Bedard as a possibility, and it's like, well, that doesn't work because they're both shooters. Bedard's more than just a shooter. I mean, that we're,
he's
that's,
more like Kane.
We're,
right, he's more
he's
Kane. Great,
I mean, he
than
is an incredible shooter. I mean, there's he's an incredible shooter.
He's a better shooter than Kane was when he came here, no doubt. But I mean, right. He has that other element where he could feed people, and he's going to attract a lot of attention, and he could skate like
he's
going to
have players on his line, like just like Kane. That he's going to have player after player after player that have career years on his wing or on his line, wherever he winds up. So I wouldn't be shy about saying, well, that doesn't work. They're both right-handed shot. They both will do it. No, it'll be fine. Like, there's a reason why people are urinating themselves over getting Connor Bedard. Like, don't overthink this, right? So,
well, that's what I mean. And I he's a guy that they could take a swing at, I think. But we'll see how that plays out.
All right, this is a good place to wrap up. There's a whole bunch of stuff that we didn't get to. But that gives us something to talk about next time. But there'll probably be 10 things that happen in between. We didn't get to talk about Kane and Taves at all. And the fact that they were actually, in fact, pushed out and not, you know. But hey, that's just a story for a discussion for another
day. Maybe
we'll
come back before the draft.
It's a date, Al. It's a date. We can come back before the draft. We can come back after the draft. And, man, we didn't even talk about that Ben Pope article. God love Ben Pope, but my Lord, that article on the tickets and, oh, my God.
He's quite the promoter. He could go right into the marketing department if something happens at the Times. But God bless. You know what? Everyone needs a job. God bless. Young guy works hard. I'll say that for him. Always seems to be around, but he's quite the marketer. He's got a
I subscribe. I subscribe. I want to be clear. We're not going to talk about this right now because we don't have time, but I subscribe to the Sun-Times to support Ben Pope and other writers and journalists at Sun-Times. But, man, I wanted to run, like, I wanted to run into fire after reading that article. But a lack of curiousness really is how you sum that up. But story for another time. Al Smaglia on Twitter at Al Smaglia, and Chris Block here, thirdmanin.com, Puck Chatter, whatever. And till next time, thanks everybody for listening, all few hundred of you that do. That's great, and we'll come back again, I promise. Have a good night, everybody.
Take care.